Why I began the program talking about this again. Over the weekend, the Des Moines Register, their opinion page, devoted almost the entire four-page section to this issue. I mean, more spin and more propaganda. The new editor over there is same as the old. More and more of the same activism coming from the editorial page over there. Just an amazing outpouring. Amongst all of that stuff is the reporting of one of the sound bites that came from the debates, or at least the public forum the other day at the State House, in which people got up from both sides and delivered their three-minute orations. One of them that was there was a fellow by the name of Zach Wall. He's a fellow that even called our program a couple of weeks ago, and we had an extended conversation with him. Very articulate young man. And the 3 minute that he spoke got videoed, and it got put up on YouTube, and now every gay rights organization is hyping this fella. He's now a superstar in the gay rights lobby here in the state of Iowa, and the Register has been hyping this thing for the last 3 or 4 days. And a lot of the blogs have been doing exactly the same thing. Several of you asked me, are you going to respond to this? And the short answer is, yeah. I'm going to do so right now. And the fella's an engineering student, and he will appreciate this. His name is Zach, as I said. I'm going to reverse engineer his speech. I'm going to take it apart line by line. It'll take me a little time. So before we do anything else, I want you to hear it uninterrupted in its entirety. It lasts about 3 minutes. And you have maybe heard it already. But for those of you who have not, this is really well done. Extremely well crafted. This is a masterpiece of propaganda, and I'm going to tell you why it is and in what way it is later, and I'm going to take it apart and label each chunk of it as a line by line to tell you exactly what he's trying to accomplish by the words that he's choosing, which were, as I said, extraordinarily well-crafted. Here it is in its entirety.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Zach Walls. I'm a sixth-generation Iowan and an engineering student at the University of Iowa, and I was raised by two women. My biological mom, Terry, told her grandparents that she was pregnant, that the artificial insemination had worked, and they wouldn't even acknowledge it. It actually wasn't until I was born and they succumbed to my infantile cuteness that they broke down and told her that they were thrilled to have another grandson. Unfortunately, neither of them lived to see her marry her partner, Jackie, of 15 years, when they wed in 2009. My younger sister and only sibling was born in 1994. We actually have the same anonymous donor, so we're full siblings, which is really cool for me. And I guess the point is that our family really isn't so different from any other Iowa family. You know, when I'm home, we go to church together, we eat dinner, we go on vacations. But we have our hard times too, we get in fights. Actually, my mom, Terry, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2000. It is a devastating disease that put her in a wheelchair, so we've had our struggles. But, you know, we're Iowans. We don't expect anyone to solve our problems for us. We'll fight our own battles. We just hope for equal and fair treatment from our government. Being a student at the University of Iowa, the topic of same-sex marriage comes up quite frequently in classroom discussions. You know, and the question always comes down to, well, can gays even raise kids? And the question, you know, the conversation gets quiet for a moment because most people don't really have an answer. And then I raise my hand and say, actually, I was raised by a gay couple and I'm doing pretty well. I scored in the 99th percentile on the ACT. I'm actually an Eagle Scout. I own and operate my own small business. If I was your son, Mr. Chairman, I believe I'd make you very proud. I'm not really so different from any of your children. My family really isn't so different from yours. After all, your family doesn't derive its sense of worth from being told by the state, you're married, congratulations. No, the sense of family comes from the commitment we make to each other, to work through the hard times so we can enjoy the good ones. It comes from the love that binds us. That's what makes a family. So what you're voting here isn't to change us. It's not to change our families. It's to change how the law views us, how the law treats us. You are voting for the first time in the history of our state to codify discrimination into our Constitution, a Constitution that, but for the proposed amendment, is the least amended Constitution in the United States of America. You are telling Iowans that some among you are second-class citizens who do not have the right to marry the person you love. So will this vote affect my family? Would it affect yours? Now, over the next 2 hours, I'm sure we're going to hear plenty of testimony about how damaging having gay parents is on kids. But in my 19 years, not once have I ever been confronted by an individual who realized independently that I was raised by a gay couple. And you know why? Because the sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on the content of my character. Thank you very much.
All right, with that, just file that away in your database. When we come back after our farm markets, one phrase at a time, I'm going to reverse engineer the brilliant think piece that you just heard. Right after Bob Quinn updates us on our farm markets.
Code 1111.
I'm going to have to hurry on this because it's fairly complicated. You may have to go back and listen to this a couple of times. I'm going to take apart Zach's think piece. It's only 3 minutes long, but it takes a lot longer than that to go through it. I could teach a college course on this, but I'm going to dissect this one chunk at a time. And I will have this podcast here for you later. But before I do reverse engineer his well-done presentation, I'm going to review what the main tactics of the gay lobby are and what they've always been. You've heard this before, but in the late 80s, I interviewed Marshall Kirk. He had written a book called After the Ball, How America is Going to Conquer Its Fear and Hatred of Gays in the 90s. That, by the way, even the title spin. It's a tactical textbook of the gay lobby describing the techniques intended to work us over. And they really, really worked. The tactics, desensitization, jamming, and conversion. Brainwashing tactics 101. Here's it briefly stated. All normal people feel shame when they perceive that they are not thinking, feeling, or acting as they are part of the pack. The trick is to get the bigot, that is anybody who disagrees with them, into the position of feeling a twinge of shame. Thus, propagandistic advertisements can depict homophobic bigots as crude loudmouths. It can show them criticized and hated and shunned. This is what the judges did last week over there at Iowa City. They didn't use logic or facts or proof. They just vilified the people who voted them out, called them idiots and rednecks and paranoid victims of propaganda. Anyway, back to the point. Our effect is achieved without reference to facts or logic or proof. Get that part over and over, without any reference to facts, logic, or proof. And here's how. Portray gays as victims of circumstances and oppression, not as aggressive challengers. In any campaign to win over the public, gays must be portrayed as victims in need of protection so that straights will not be inclined to refuse to adopt the role of protector. And they'll use many fallacies and logical fallacies to advance the cause. Here are the main ones. The number one, ad hominem, just heap insults and verbal abuse on those who disagree with you. Call them idiots, victims of propaganda, or rednecks, like the judges did last week. The other two is the other one is begging the question. The Register does this all the time. They did this over the weekend repeatedly. In fact, the judiciary and the Democratic Party use this all the time, too, assuming the validity of what they are trying to normalize and approve. Putting discrimination, as they call it, into the Constitution assumes the legitimacy of same-gender marriage and the claims of the gay lobby without any proof or logic or reason. Then the false claims of equality of unequal things. We are just like everyone. All sexuality is equal, and rights derived from those claims are equal. And if we are denied equality, our civil rights are being denied, and that's discrimination. It's wonderfully circular reasoning. So I'm going to have to go as fast as I can here because we're going to not have enough time for all of this. Pardon me if this seems rushed, because it is. So let's begin. The first point that Zach makes.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Zach Walls. I'm a sixth-generation Iowan and an engineering student at the University of Iowa.
All right. Here Zach is establishing his bona fides, his credentials. Six generations, long enough to know better, I'm thinking. By the way, being an Iowan is of no distinction to this argument. It's just an appeal to regional patriotism. My wife's family came over on the Mayflower. Mine got here in time to be drafted into the war between the states. So what? There are sixth-generation Iowans in prison. Ethics are not based upon seniority.
And I was raised by two women.
Reared by two women? Lots of Iowans are reared by two women. Moms and older sisters, and mamas and grandmas, and moms and stepmoms. Nothing unusual about that. You notice he did not use the L word, lesbians. This is called the spin of omission.
My biological mom, Terry, told her grandparents that she was pregnant, that the artificial insemination had worked, and they wouldn't even acknowledge it.
Acknowledge what? That the artificial insemination had worked? Or that the incomplete and defective relationship into which their grandchild would be born? Here you have the first budding claim of victim status. I was rejected even before I was born. Oh, that's very powerful. Just like Jesus, he was unacknowledged and rejected before he was born. I was unacknowledged, and I must be somebody special, therefore.
It actually wasn't until I was born and they succumbed to my infantile cuteness that they broke down and told her that they were thrilled to have another grandson.
Of course, we don't blame kids for the lame things their parents do. Lucky you were cute, though.
Unfortunately, neither of them lived to see her marry her partner Jackie of 15 years when they wed in 2009.
They didn't live to see my two mommies get a fake marriage license after a judicial scam? This point is here to arouse another round of sympathy, based upon the empathy all of us feel upon hearing of a profound loss like this. Another layer of the victim status.
Unfortunately, neither of them lived to see her marriage.
I already played that one. Here's the next one.
My younger sister and only sibling was born in 1994. We actually have the same anonymous donor, so we're full siblings, which is really cool for me.
Ah, the ship off the old flask, swimming out of the same gene pool. Why lucky? An absentee dad is still gone, whether or not he donated once or twice, so what's the point?
And I guess the point is that our family really isn't so different from any other Iowa family. You know, when I'm home, we go to church together, we eat dinner, we go on vacations. But we have our hard times, too. We get in fights,
No different than most Iowa families? Yeah, most Iowans have two moms, sperm donor for a dad. We go to church and fight, though, sometimes in that order. This is just another warm fuzzy. It's a fallacy of equating two unequal things. And by the way, we go to church together, too? He's really saying, well, God thinks it's okay, so shouldn't you? That's the unspoken message of this fallacy.
Actually, my mom, Terry, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2000. It is a devastating disease that put her in a wheelchair, so we've had our struggles.
My mom got a really nasty illness, wheelchair and all that, struggles, another layer of victim state, a sad story about mom, so I'll use your empathy for my mom to manipulate sympathy for the lesbian sub-theme of the story. Again, two fallacies. Victim status imputes virtue, and a similar life experience confers moral equivalency upon that relationship. I'm halfway surprised we didn't hear a story about a sick puppy.
But, you know, we're Iowans. We don't expect anyone to solve our problems for us. We'll fight our own battles. We just hope for equal and fair treatment from our government.
We are Iowans. We bear our own burdens. That's another round of regional flag-waving patriotism. This is another rhetorical device to equate two different notions. Iowa is a political entity. It's just geography and politics. Everyone who lives here gets to call themselves Iowans. There are good ones and bad ones, smart ones and stupid ones, rich ones and poor ones, honest ones and criminals. To label yourself an Iowan in this context has no objective content. It's not supposed to. He's saying if you are an Iowan, you are special, and by implication, so is he. That spin by gratuitous flattery, plus more equivocation for good measure.
We just hope for equal and fair treatment from our government.
Again, this is the fallacy of equating unequal things by demanding equal treatment, a twofer. Then begging the question. He asserts a status, that is same-gender marriage, something which most Iowans have already rejected over and over, first by DOMA and then by firing activist judges. Then he says, we just hope for equal and fair treatment from our government. He, as a person, his mom, as a person, get all the equal and fair treatment the rest of us get. He is arguing for something Iowans have rejected. his or her mom's self-selected sexual identity, conferring rights beyond those conferred by gender. It's a silly notion, which only silly judges could contemplate.
Being a student at the University of Iowa, the topic of same-sex marriage comes up quite frequently in classroom discussions. You know, and the question always comes down to, well, can gays even raise kids? And the question, you know, the conversation gets quiet for a moment because most people don't really have an answer. And then I raise my hand and say, actually, I was raised by a gay couple and I'm doing pretty well.
Can gay kids even raise kids? That's not the question. Of course they can. That has never been the question. The question is, should they? Then the follow-up question is, do people of the same gender qualify for a marriage license? All kinds of kids have to overcome the disadvantages of incomplete or dysfunctional relationships. However, there's no reason to subsidize even more. People of all descriptions have been rearing children for centuries. But we know what the ideal is for the best predictable results. Intentionally equating or subsidizing anything else is risky and unbelievably self-destructive.
I scored in the 99th percentile on the ACT. I'm actually an Eagle Scout. I own and operate my own small business. If I was your son, Mr. Chairman, I believe I'd make you very proud.
I believe he's referring to the Iowa Test of Basic Skills there, not the ACT. Eagle Scout? Cool. Business owner? Cool. Yeah, cool. Any dad would be proud of a high-functioning kid. Too bad you didn't get a chance to know the guy in the flask. Plus, this is just a rhetorical device and another fallacy of logic. Premise one, some moms are lesbians. Two, my mom was a lesbian. Three, I turned out well, productive, and healthy. The conclusion, therefore, lesbianism is productive and healthy. That's complete and utter nonsense.
I'm not really so different from any of your children. My family really isn't so different from yours. After all, your family doesn't derive its sense of worth from being told by the state, you're married, congratulations. No.
Exactly. The state doesn't create marriage. And you're right, my family doesn't derive its sense of self-worth from the state. It would be tragic if anyone or anybody of any description did. However, when it comes to same-gender marriage, only a lawless state would create such a thing, since it certainly didn't emerge out of the created order, and only the state can bully the rest of us into compliance.
The sense of family comes from the commitment we make to each other, to work through the hard times so we can enjoy the good ones. It comes from the love that binds us. That's what makes a family.
Love and commitment are indeed the bonds of a family under the covenant of God. This is the first thing that you've said with which I am in complete agreement. And in a world without a welfare state, your, quote, family arrangements would be irrelevant to me. But in this world, your manufactured bonds would have extended reach into my back pocket through the tax code and hundreds, if thousands, of different ways. And you said so in our conversation.
So what you're voting here isn't to change us. It's not to change our families. It's to change how the law views us, how the law treats us.
Something else we can agree on. But again, this would change a bunch of laws which subsidize the family and grant spousal equivalency access to benefits, including Social Security. This is what this push really is all about. Access to other people's money.
We're voting for the first time in the history of our state to codify discrimination into our Constitution, a Constitution that, but for the proposed amendment, is the least amended Constitution in the United States of America.
Full circle, right back to the fallacy of equating two unequal things, and then grabbing the benefits based upon begging the question. For the record, homosexual behavior is just that, behavior. There is no identity based upon homosexual behavior. That's the Kinsey fraud. Orientation towards same-sex behavior does not confer minority status or civil rights. Homosexual behavior does not form group entitlement either, nor is it a protected class, except in the minds of activist bureaucrats and soft-headed politicians and judges. Discrimination regarding marriage is everywhere in our form of government, and so is marriage equality. Everybody who is qualified can get married. Here are the qualifications. 1, a partner who wants you. 2, you both are of appropriate age. 3, if not, you have parental permission. 4, your partner must not be your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad, your neighbor's wife or husband, or livestock. And please, one at a time. Number 5, you must not be of the same gender. That's what we're negotiating now. And number 6, you are mentally, morally, physically, economically, and spiritually fit, assuming you have a functioning relationship with your parents and pastor who can help you through this screening process.
You are telling Iowans that some among you are second-class citizens who do not have the right to marry the person you love.
Bohaki. You can indeed marry the one you love if they and you qualify. I just listed the qualifications. This is nothing new. You have not discovered some recent impediment, but one that has existed for thousands of years, only to be messed with recently by identity movement politics and soft-headed judges.
So will this vote affect my family? Would it affect yours?
What colossal arrogance. The unspoken fallacy in this little barb is that unless some perceived threat affects me personally on an existential level, there can be no legitimate concern. What a selfish attitude. Apply that logic to just about any social ill you can think of, and the objection evaporates. Plus, as I said, we live in a welfare state. Another group of people jumping into an already broken safety net is hardly the smart thing to do. We in Iowa know better than most that we get more of what we subsidize.
Over the next 2 hours, I'm sure we're going to hear plenty of testimony about how damaging having gay parents is on kids. But in my 19 years, not once have I ever been confronted by an individual who realized independently that I was raised by a gay couple. And you know why? Because the sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on the content of my character. Thank you very much.
Zach, your whole argument and the fact that you felt it necessary to make it refutes your conclusion. It's totally understandable, though. You are a bright and sensitive kid. No child likes to think ill of his parents. And just like most parents want to think the best of their children, nobody wants to think their parents have flaws or that they are broken. I've watched this happen over and over. I've watched people who are pro-life, who have been politically active for life, have gone to life rallies, have called abortion murder, campaigned against pro-abortion candidates, do a complete 180 when they find out somebody in their family has had one. They say, well, my daughter had an abortion. I love my daughter. I can't think of her as a murderer, so I guess I'll have to change my mind about abortion. Zach, I couldn't and I don't expect you to think less of your mom. You love her. You should. But because you love her, you don't have to idealize all of her choices, especially her broken ones, even if she eventually produced something special. You. And as a personal aside, while you're at school, spend less time in sociology class and more time working on engineering. As a challenge, apply the logic and skill sets and discipline of engineering to the claims advanced by the gay lobby. If you do, you may find most of their claims are as bogus as the majority of the rest of us do.
Views expressed are those of the host, guests, and callers, not necessarily those of News Radio 1040 WHO.
There is no way you can absorb everything that I just said in the last 20 minutes. Not the first time. You're going to have to go back and re-listen. If that was an important thing for you to understand and absorb, I'll encourage you to go and listen to our podcast, which I'll have posted later this afternoon. I'm getting a lot of response already, a lot of email response, and I really appreciate the kind words and the other stuff.